It's the national hour of the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. I think my eyes are going.
That's okay. Just go to 600 and go 360 over. Pull a 360.
This hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. You heard him. That is Gord Stellick, Sammy McKee. I'm Nick Kiprios. And we are less than 10 days away from the NHL trade deadline. In a few moments, we'll welcome in Brian Lawton, former NHL player agent, general manager. He's always got a great ear to the ground this time of year. Looking forward to talking to him. But in the meantime, teams are still fighting away, Gord, for those last few playoff spots, which makes them buyers or just cautious teams.
Okay. So I'll be quick here because I found last night, I felt now we've returned to our regularly scheduled programming, okay? From the Four Nations face-off, kind of slow to get back into it, and then last night I'm back into the regular NHL programming. So you've got Detroit's on a tear. They're serious. Columbus is on a tear. They're serious. The Rangers had a big W. Philadelphia, Montreal jumped over the New York Islanders, who I'm declaring sellers now. The Pittsburgh Penguins are a fire sale, and they don't realize it, so they're sellers now. Then on the West, though, is where it's last night's games. Calgary wins. So they're back in the playoffs. Vancouver on the outside. St. Louis, Utah, they may make a battle for it. Seattle, Nashville, Chicago, out, out, out. Horrible season, horrible season, horrible season. Sell, sell, sell. And that's where I think last night added that any kind of hope after the Four Nations face-off that, never mind Chicago, but the other two may pull off a run like, say, Nashville did last year. That's gone. So we're getting a little bit more of a division of sellers. Meanwhile, I'm loving the playoff races. I don't think Ottawa fans are liking them so much right now because all of a sudden you're out of it one more time again, and teams like Detroit and Columbus are in.
Coach Knobloch in Edmonton experienced something for the first time, four losses in a row here.
They were losses.
You look at
the 17 goals, I think.
Yeah,
the last three.
You look at the standings right now, and it's kind of nice that you got a little bit of a cushion here. But should Edmonton Oilers fans be concerned at all, in your opinion?
So, boy, Steve Alakat's so good, right? You know, he was on yesterday, and again, I said I'm torn between like how can you dump on Stuart Skinner, where the kid, because he's a young goaltender, took you to Game 7 of a Stanley Cup final. Like, you know, he had a monster goaltending performance there to get them to Game 7. Yet, Steve Alakat had the stats about, well, no, here's where there's some concerns. And again, last night, oh, man,
the wraparound.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, one game does not make a decision based on it. But, you know, you want to leave no stone unturned. And you got Arvidsson and Skinner really have been indifferent acquisitions. So, I can see, you know, Stan Bowman saying, hey, we were one game away from it. And, we got to look maybe to shake, rattle, roll a little bit.
Not to beat the dead horse for Edmonton Oilers fans here, but, you know, that Broberg-Holloway decision they made this offseason to, you know, go with Skinner that they decided to pay, and that's one that feels like it's going to haunt them a bit. You know, they had two young, good players who they've been really good for the Blues this year. I know Broberg was hurt for a little bit, but that's a tough one. It's a tough one.
Today on Sportsnet.ca, I came out with my 4.0 trade board. Mm-hmm. As we get ever so closer to the trade deadline, some interesting names that we'll go through, I think, throughout the show. We'll also obviously get Brian Lawton to weigh in on a lot of it. But, Gord, for you, the sense is that this one will be a little bit more active than we've seen probably in the last few years.
Boy, yeah. Yeah, and I guess it's indicative, like, coming out of COVID, it was like, oh, good, the game, okay, good. You know, sense of normalcy, okay, like, let's take some time. And now there's just demands. There's pressure. And a lot of teams have high expectations. Durant and Deal already got it going. Like we mentioned, trades between Calgary, Philadelphia, you know, Vancouver, New York Rangers, those are trades. Trade deadline deal with San Jose and Dallas. That's a trade deadline deal. So I think it's like the Wild West. And then Seth Jones... Patrick Kane did it 2 years ago. When you remember about getting traded to New York? Remember nothing was going on, and then Patrick Kane in Chicago kind of said, and you got traded to New York. Seth Jones in a very measured, articulate way, but showing his exasperation and despair that Seth Jones now is not an if. It's a where and a when. And that's another big piece that's going to be in motion with what he said after Chicago's loss last night.
Yeah, the name that is relevant because the Leafs played them last night. They had a big comeback win over the Bruins, who now are even in a tougher spot. The most fascinating, I think there's bigger names, maybe more impactful players, but the Marchand question to me is the most fascinating one of the deadline. And I see him on your board today that you had him on your list, I think second after Rantanen. This is a really, really interesting deadline for the Bruins, and specifically with Marchand.
Yeah, I had a choice of taking him off, and I probably should have.
Think?
Yeah, I think I should have, but I just felt the information off of it was really important, at least to where we sit now. And I know you just go on the website for the pictures only, Sammy, but the things that...
Correct.
The thing that I wrote about Marchand is that it seems like, first and foremost, an extension seems to have hit a stalemate, and it's been there, and it doesn't appear to be
going... Which happened with Rantanen.
Doesn't appear to be going away soon here.
Mm-hmm.
The big difference, obviously, between Rantanen and Marchand is the emotional attachment that Marchand and the Bruins have for one another, and that's just that's non-existent for Rantanen in Carolina.
Well, in Colorado it was. Boy, oh boy.
In Colorado it was.
Yeah.
So the feeling, at least going into this week for Marchand, is that there is the option of trading him, but if they don't get an extension and Marchand remains as adamant as he is that he doesn't want to go anywhere, then the probability of a team trading for him doesn't reach a feverish place.
Well, okay, Boston and the New York Rangers, to me, Kippy, two very interesting situations that they have to be in the playoffs, okay? So you're thinking, okay, then to be that, they've got to be aggressive. Where maybe acknowledging, more in Boston's case, I think, but in both cases, that you know what? We're going to fall a little bit short. We didn't expect to, but let's not be Pittsburgh, okay? Let's not just wallow. Let's do, like with Andy Brickley, we were surprised the Bruins didn't make the playoffs a couple of years, you know, like 2013, 2014, 15, whatever it may be. I don't know if that's a question he didn't hear from me, but anyway, but they just quickly got, you know, that you do a little bit of a dip, yeah. You make a few tweaks, okay, which could involve, hey, trading a player like that, and then all of a sudden you're back at it, reinforced next year rather than wallowing.
And I wrote that today as part of my piece today was that, and you used Boston of 10 years ago. I use the Washington Capitals of today,
right,
as an example, not only for maybe the Bruins, but the St. Louis Blues as well, is that do you really need to go into a 4 or 5 year retool or rebuild when a team like the Washington Capitals were able to do it in 12 months.
Yeah.
All right, let's welcome in Brian Lawton, former NHL player, agent, general manager, and has experienced this time of year wearing many different hats. Lots. How are you, pal?
I am doing fantastic, Kipper. And to answer your question, the Washington Capitals were able to do it because they've got a very good friend of mine and terrific guy at his job, Tim Barnes, running their analytics. And if you look at their players, they've done it a lot of different ways, but a lot of it has been through their analytics department, and you have to give them a ton of credit. It's amazing what they were able to do when we all thought they might be down for 3, 4, 5 years.
So is this, and Gord just mentioned the Boston Bruins, and, you know, we just mentioned Washington, of course, but is there a handful of teams that can go down this path now? Is this the new norm now, instead of looking at a 5-year program?
I think you're highly unlikely to be able to do it if you haven't spent the last 2 or 3 years minimum. I'd prefer 4 or 5 because it's been around that long building an analytics department that can give you a more holistic view of what every player does and how they fit into your lineup. If you talk to a lot of teams, it's more about, you know, individual matchups. It's not so much about, let's just go acquire the best players and see what happens. It's more about winning your third line, winning their matchup, your fourth line being better than the other team's fourth line, your third line perhaps being able to shut down the other team's first or second line, because you know how the game works. This is what your background tells you, Kipper. There's a fluidity to it. And the teams that I see that are doing really well in this area, Carolina, Florida, Washington, Tampa, they understand this. And they're doing a really good job going line by line. I have been doing this myself for a very long time, and I see a lot of the same results or conclusions that other people are coming to.
So, okay, Brian, us being older guys, whatever, in 2025, I like your props about the analytics, but what about the eyeball test still? That you've got analytics staffs, but you've also got scouting staff. And you've got scouting staffs, and then you got the one guy that you go, I'm going to call you later, okay? The one or two that you were your super bounce-off guys, whatever. And that used to be all you had, basically. So where is the balance nowadays? Or are you saying, like, is it 90-10 analytics? Or where is the balance? I still got to think there's a need for those kind of individuals within an organization.
There absolutely is. And even if you go to the sports that are easy to analyze, like baseball, and we've done some of these tests with some of the people I've worked with, and you go back and look what the amateur scouts said about, you know, the young and upcoming players, the scouts eye test was actually better in that circumstance because, quite frankly, they didn't have great data. You just had these guys going in and saying, I like the look of this player. I like what he does. You know, there's people in the game that I've called analytics geniuses long before we even created analytics. Jacques Lemaire comes to mind. Jacques could watch a warm-up and tell you which players weren't going to play well that night. Like, he was really incredible. Lou Lamoriello has been able to do this for years. They were ahead of other people. But ultimately now with the new player and puck tracking, if you've built an engine to digest that information so that you can determine what's meaningful versus measurable, then you're way ahead of the game. You can really look at different pieces of the game, what different players who maybe you detest, Gord, because they make a play that's just so ugly, but it's only one mistake. And if they make nine other great plays that maybe don't shine the way the mistake goes bad, then you're onto something. I would offer a guy like Evan Bouchard as an example of this. Evan looks like sometimes he's not trying, he's disengaged. His blunders tend to be really obvious, sometimes really ugly, but he far outweighs his value in the good things he does. And there's a reason why he was so dominant last year in the playoffs for Edmonton. He hasn't maybe played up to that level this year, and he's striving to get back to it. But there's just a lot that goes into evaluating players, and we have way more tools today than we used to.
You're watching and listening to Brian Lawton, former NHL player, agent, general manager, as we get ever so closer to the NHL trade deadline. Lots, my list came out for Sportsnet.ca, my fourth edition, as we get ever so closer here. I'm not sure if you had a chance to look at some of the names that I threw up, but I'm going to throw a few at you. And, you know, go anywhere you want. Top of the list, obviously, the whole world, the whole hockey world's watching Mikko Rantanen again. Very seldom that we see a guy this good in his prime get bounced around like a pinball. But is that going to be the case between now and this time next Friday if the Carolina Hurricanes can't get him signed?
Certainly a possibility, but first off, of course, I looked at your list. I always do, Kipper, because I think you do a phenomenal job. So
thank
keep
you
doing it. I think it's a huge benefit to everybody that's out there if you haven't checked it out. But in terms of Mikko Rantanen, there's a lot of disinformation going on about Mikko. If you talk, I've talked to a lot of coaches and often had this discussion about, man, that McKinnon's unbelievable. And you'd be surprised how many people say, don't undersell Rantanen. He's the guy a lot of nights that really killed us. So now Miko's been traded. I don't think it's any secret that he wanted to stay in Colorado. That did not work out for whatever reasons. Obviously, they couldn't come to agreement on a contract. Eventually, he was moved. He was brought in. He was moved for a player that's a very good player in Nekesh, but is much cheaper also. At $6.5 million this year and $6.5 next year. Colorado had their reasons for wanting to do that. It was ultimately their decision, not Rantanen's. So Rantanen goes to Carolina, hasn't played up to the standards by the general metrics that most people use, which are goals and assists. And through his eight games, he's got a few points. It's a shadow of what he's done or had done in the past. I think you have to discount that. I was fortunate enough to attend three of his games in the last, it's probably almost 3 weeks now because of the Four Nations, but he was sensational in those games. He just wasn't scoring. You can see he's a little bit off, but you have to expect that when he gets traded. Carolina, on the other hand, clearly wants to sign him. They traded for him for a reason. They love him. It really will come down to the player more than even contract, because a lot's been made of that. But it'll come down to whether or not the player is willing to give up his right that he has worked or waited a very long time for. And that is, of course, unrestricted free agency. Doesn't really know any other teams, so everything about Carolina is new to him. Tom Dundon's doing a great job. Their team has been winning consistently since he took over as an owner. But that story is yet to be written, and it is a possibility that he could be retraded, because I wouldn't see an analytics-driven, smart organization like Carolina just acquiring Rantanen and losing the player they lost as a rental for the year. I just don't see that happening.
So, by the way, Brian, I love your talking about Jacques Lemaire, because I always got to throw the name Jim Gregory, who's as great a guy I met. He had that knack. Any hockey game, he would predict the game. Any hockey game, you chat with him, you just had that kind of knack. So I love those kind of individuals. So as a general manager and a player agent, so, okay, Seth Jones' name has been out there for a while, but a whole new level last night. And he was measured, he was calm, he articulated, and that. So if you're Kyle Davidson today or Seth Jones' agent today, what are you doing?
I don't think he would have been thrilled to hear that, and yet you can't blame Seth Jones for speaking his mind. Seth Jones has a lot of really good hockey left in him. I think that his game has dropped on the basis of they're just not that close to winning. Kipper's been there. You understand this. It's a downer. They've got a lot of work to do in Chicago. They're trying to do it. Bedard has gone not backwards, just probably sideways. I think that's overblown. He's a young player. He's going to have ups and downs. He's going to be a great player. Overall, the organization, though, has not shown a lot of progress. I think Seth Jones is frustrated by that. I think what you're saying, Gord, was very, very truthful to how that whole interview was handled. It wasn't like he was complaining and raving and he hated Chicago or anything like that. It's just more the realization as you get to your 30s that you only have so much good hockey left to play. And a player like Seth Jones, who really should have been on the U.S. team, not should have been in that Billy Guerin made a mistake and didn't take him, should have been in that he has that type of skill level, that type of hockey IQ, that type of physical being, where he could have been a very, very good defenseman on a very good defensive team in Team USA. So I'm sure he's looking at that and saying, man, I'd love to have a chance to play in the Olympics. My chances are not increased by playing here in Chicago. So what about somewhere else?
Lots. How about just the fact that a team could trade for Seth Jones, knock off about 5 or 6 minutes of what he's used to in Chicago, put him in an environment like two teams that he's been linked to is Dallas and or Florida, and he will get better with less minutes and less responsibility of carrying all the weight on his shoulders, no?
100%. I know Seth personally. I have a lot of good friends that are very good friends with him. He'd never admit it, but I think he's a little bit beaten down that it hasn't gone better. He takes losing hard. It's no fun. Everybody, as we saw with these players through the Four Nations, all these guys that make it to the NHL, I don't care if you're an elite defenseman like Seth Jones or a fourth liner, there's a massive amount of pride in what you do, and you want to do it as well as you can. If he went to a team like Dallas, I could name 10 teams that would love to have him. Salary caps are tight. That's prohibitive. I think after last night, Gord, his chances went up that he'll be moved at some point, whether or not it's this deadline in the summer or down the road. I think it's inevitable.
Almost 26 minutes last night from way too much. Okay, we got some Vancouver Canuck fans out there dying to get your thoughts on Brock Besser. There's just no way when goals are hard to come by and shots on goal are hard to come by that Jimmy Rutherford is not taking a crack at finding a way to sign him before he needs to make the ultimate decision of moving him or not.
Yeah, I think Vancouver has grown to appreciate Brock. There was a time there where they were not that thrilled with him. I don't think they appreciated what he brings every night. I know Brock personally. He's a terrific human being. I think he's in a lot of ways misunderstood as a player. People think he's not fast. He can't really skate. That's not true. Brock moves around the ice fine. He's a clutch goal scorer. I think he has the ability to turn into what Sam Reinhart was able to turn into when he went to Florida, if he gets into the right situation. And I think that'll make it. I think Vancouver recognizes this when they see him. They'd probably like to see it more consistently, but Brock is capable of that. So that'll be a close one to watch. Kibber, I don't disagree with you. I think it'd be hard for Jimmy Rutherford to pass on him. And yet it feels like there's been a lot of noise around Vancouver in the last 6 to 9 months. So you never know what's going to happen. I can see Gord smiling.
Well, let's talk about Jimmy Rutherford's old team and the Pittsburgh Penguins. So the Buffalo Sabres now, they're dead last, Pittsburgh. I know they got more points, but the Sabres' winning percentage is ahead of the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, you know, Brian, one thing I liked about yesterday's game with Washington, Ovechkin scores, so that's kind of the story, even though they lost. And I thought he'd be chasing the record maybe in a vacuum, that the story would be, Ovechkin scores, Capitals lose 8-1 again. You know what I mean? So the good part is he's on a relevant team. Like, is Sidney Crosby's next game that matters going to be the Olympics? Is that it? They're not a rebuilding team. They don't have a young talent, but Sid wants to stay there. I'm not knocking him wanting to stay there. Gino wants to stay there. Give me the scoop on the Pittsburgh Penguins that I just don't get.
It's a fair question from a fan standpoint. I don't know about you, but I always want to see these great players like Sidney Crosby competing at the highest level at the most important time of the
exactly.
year. Pushing themselves to the edge, you know, and Sid actually, you know, statistically showed really well in the Four Nations. I felt like he was severely injured, to be honest with you, and he still played incredible. He talks a lot about or shows a lot of his character. Pittsburgh is in a dilemma. If a player like that wants to stay, then he certainly can stay. I think the only way a player like that can ever leave, because, Gord, I know you're smiling because you're also thinking, well, man, if I was running that team and I had to look to the future, I'd feel like it was my fiduciary responsibility to try to maximize that asset. You know, and that's a tough thing to do when you have a Hall of Fame player like Sidney Crosby. I don't think anybody would take on that challenge, nor should they. But I do think if Sid were to go to them and say, I've got this guy that I kind of grew up in my neighborhood back in Cole Harbor out in Colorado and maybe I could, you know, play for them and you guys could get a nice return. I'm making all that up because I've never heard that Sid's ever done anything like that. As a matter of fact, I believe in my heart, he looks at a guy like Mario and says, you know, Mario played the whole time here. I want to play the whole time here. You know, he looks at a Steve Yzerman and sees the same thing. But if a guy did want to move, you can always throw out the greatest move of all, which, of course, one of them was Ray Bourque. All those years in Boston, didn't get it done. And then, you know, one day wakes up and says, I want to go somewhere and try to win, which, of course, he did win. And then he retired.
One more here. Lots for me anyways. The one team that I did pick that could end up being the biggest star of the day next week is the St. Louis Blues. I wrote that I don't believe that they're in a fire sale, but there are as many as three or four prominent names there. Jordan Binnington, who we've all questioned since he's won a Stanley Cup. How many years ago, Gord?
2019.
2019. all of a sudden his star is shining best right now. If you are Doug Armstrong and you know that he's got 2 years left at $6 million and you're going through this transition period for the organization, would now be the best time to try to sell Jordan Binnington?
There's no doubt his value is back to where it was after 2019. You know, and he did it in a relatively short time, but he proved that he's a big time goalie under massive pressure situations. So, yes, I think they have a number of players that teams would be very interested
in. No. Let me rephrase that. Edmonton Oilers.
Edmonton, of course. That's not gone well, but maybe that's a small sample size. We don't know yet, although there's not a lot of time to find out. So that would make a lot of people in management there probably uncomfortable because their team had played really well. But the situation for me in St. Louis is more centered around this transition plan. Doug Armstrong has another year as general manager, then it's going to transfer to Steen, who's waiting in the wings, is apprenticing under Doug. He's been tabbed as the next GM. And in my opinion, this is where it gets much more complicated. Gord, your Steen, Kipper, your Army, are your, you know, visions aligned?
You're fired, Gord.
No, I resigned.
Oh, okay.
No, Gord, you're chomping at the bit because your opportunity to manage one of these clubs, which is a great honor, is coming your way shortly. It's coming down the pike, and notwithstanding you get hit by a bus, you're going to be there and you're going to be ready to do the job, and you're an astute human like Steen is. Your father was in the game. You've got, you know, great pedigree. You've got great character, but you may be looking more in the, it's time for the next generation of St. Louis Blues. So what does that mean, you know, for Kipper, who's pretending he's Army? It means maybe I wish Kipper would trade some of the players that are past 30, 31, 32. Who would that be on their team? Pareko, Fowler, Falk, Letty. You know, there's a
Shen,
number of guys.
Shen at the middle.
Yes, there's Shen. You're looking at Jordan Binnington. You know, that's the dilemma to me. And how these guys play down the stretch, never mind we need to bring in somebody else to be Jim Montgomery, because that would be a completely different opinion of what the club should do. One of which is always the same from a coach: we must win now, because that's how they've been raised. That's how they see things. It's not always the right answer, though, and that's why Doug Armstrong is so key in this, trying to chart the right course for what's best for the St. Louis Blues. You guys always ask me to just say what you mean, Lots. In my opinion, I do think that they could very much be like the Washington Capitals when I look at some of the younger players they have on their team that aren't necessarily, you know, 20 to 23-year-olds, but guys like Thomas, Kyrou, Neighbors. I think there's enough there where you can retool that on the fly and you're not out of the picture for 3, 4, 5 years. So I think what happens with St. Louis is going to be really fascinating to watch, because we know it's going to happen in essentially the next 10 days.
You mentioned an interesting thing about how much the coaches always want the present, right? Because they know that's great for you as a general manager that bring young people in. I remember once, I think it was with John Ferguson, that Pat Quinn, being the old powerful coach, I think he gave up a second for Yannick Perreau, and Pat Quinn said, screw it, I'm not going to play him. And the second went to Nashville, and they used it to get Roman Josi a few. But so I'm curious about the appropriateness of bringing a coach in on trade talk. And there's 32 different relationships, okay? Some, the GM has a lot of clout. Others, the coach kind of, I don't know.
It really varies throughout the league, depending on your tenure and your personality. You know, there are a lot of coaches I feel are super involved. There's other ones, you know, not so much. And you could name a lot of these guys. But at the end of the day, for me personally, as a manager, I always wanted the coach's opinion. They're the field general down there on the front line, still seeing things that you can only see when you're standing behind the bench about players. So I think you want to get that information out of them. I think the relationship works best when coaches understand that their role is to make the group of existing players they have better. And that's what they should spend 80 to 90% of their time on. If they have thoughts, you want to hear them. I wanted to hear them. And you want to help them. You want to let them help you make better decisions, because the coaches know really more than the managers do. If you break it down, they just have their hands full trying to wrangle in their team on a daily basis. It's a massive, massive marathon and sprint for these guys at the same time.
Last thought, Lotz. Does this trade deadline have a chance to have a much different feel than the last few years based on the cushion of a salary cap going up substantially in the next 3 years?
I think that question is really valid. Kipper, it's been so tight. I'm still hearing this a little too much, so I'm surprised. Oh, my God, we don't have any cap space. What are we going to do? There's always a way. If you're creative, if you're willing to roll the sleeves up, there's always a way to make it work out. It's hard work, twice as hard as it used to be, but you can still get things done. For me, the macro thought would be, okay, next year we're going to 95.5. It's our biggest increase we've had in 5 years, longer than that, I believe. And what is that going to do to the league? I think it's going to give everybody more money. That means I'm going to get forced to have to pay more for free agents. I'm going to have to compete with more teams. I'm making my stand right now. If I'm an NHL team and I think I got a good team, I'm 100% going all in on this trade deadline, and I'm moving mountains to get the guys I want. That's just my opinion. That doesn't mean it's right.
We like your opinion, and I'm sure the fans out there watching and listening feel the same way as we get ever so closer to trade deadline. Hey, Lotz, great stuff, man. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, guys. I really like this, because whenever I do an interview with Gord, I can never see him smiling, or, I just know he's going to zing me with something, but it's good to be able to look your accuser in the face and see smiling back at
you. Great seeing you as well, Brian.
That is absolutely Brian Lawton, former NHL player, agent, and general manager, and a great guest on The Real Kipper and Morning Show.
Now, quickly, I want to qualify.
Yeah.
I want to qualify. Like, I'm selfishly, let's be selfish. I want to see the great players in the playoffs. I want to see Ovechkin in the playoffs. I want to see Sidney Crosby in the playoffs. I want to see McDavid in the play. I want those players to be in. So I'm not saying Sidney, like I respect Sidney Crosby's right to want to stay in Pittsburgh, and he has won Stanley Cup rings there. I'm just saying, like what the hell's going on there? Like, just you're not rebuilding, and all of a sudden you're out again and whatever. So will Sidney Crosby ever be in the playoffs again as a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins? So anyway, I do respect, if anybody has a right to stay where they want to stay, absolutely, that is him.
And he's earned everything from being loyal to them to changing his mind if he wants as early as next week or this summer.
Would Patrick Kane have stayed in Chicago if they were half decent? Probably, right? I don't know. Is it a comparable?
I don't think it is, because money would be an issue probably for Pat Kane more in Chicago, and what he's worth maybe there or somewhere else, and it just wouldn't with Sid. You just pay whatever he asks for.
Whatever his jersey number is.
No.
Yeah. It's Gord, not George.
Yeah. All right.
Continue. Oh, hear him back.
Yeah, you're there.
To your point, if he stays in Pittsburgh, you'll never play another Stanley Cup playoff game.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
It's heartbreaking.
Which what I'm seeing, right? They are dead last.
They're horrible.
Dead last in the Eastern Conference.
They have no goalie. They have a brutal defense.
They have no kids. They have no youth. Like, San Jose has youth. San Jose is a bad team, but they got a bunch of young guys, right? They got hope in that regard.
Anyway. Let's take a break, and we'll do game time on the other side.
All right, you heard the man. All right, and we'll get into a little bit more. Brian Lawton talked about after the break about teams maybe spending more, because if they don't spend it on their team, they're going to have to spend it back to the players. I'll explain when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As a reminder, this hour of Real Kipper and Born brought to you by Bet365, which means a little game time. Sammy McKee.
It's game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app, latest odds, and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Three games tonight across the league. Big one tonight for the Ottawa Senators hosting the red-hot Winnipeg Jets. And we get accused on this show of not talking enough about the Jets, so we'll use Bet365 to do our favorite segment called Jets Talk. Boys, how good are the Jets? The Jets are very, very good. Very good. Compliment the Jets time?
Well, the one thing that you actually, what I really loved about the Four Nations face-off was that, of course, we get all accused of following our local teams more than others, but you get to really watch everybody under one roof, which was really cool.
I know who you're going to say.
Morrissey, as much as you think you know he's a good player, like, he's really good.
Really?
Yeah, I thought Jacob Slavin, to me, was on Team USA. But, hey, the final game, Nathan MacKinnon scored against Connor Hellebuck. I mean, the Jets, Carolina, Toronto are the three teams that, what can they do in the playoffs to differentiate from having so many great regular seasons?
Oh, we're being nice to them. We don't want to get too mad. Jets talk is only positive. They only won 10 in a row now, and they have 85 points from 58 games, 41 wins this year. Unbelievable season. They are big favorites in Ottawa tonight, minus 155 on the money line. And the other Canadian team in action tonight, the Vancouver Canucks, speaking of teams who are desperate for a win, they are in L.A. to take on the Kings. They are plus 150 underdogs. Just for our folks in Vancouver, they are in desperate need of a win. They're fighting with the Calgary Flames, who got a great road win last night against the Washington Capitals. So they're in a dogfight for that last playoff spot.
I should have taken Pettersson off my trade board today, but I didn't for just one reason and one reason only.
What's that?
Jimmy Rutherford.
What about him?
Wild man.
That's your general manager.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I do not put anything past that guy on this time of year.
Mm-hmm. No, anything goes.
But if he does not come out of this funk, I think it's realistic that come summertime, he may not get to July 1st where his no move kicks in.
You know, certain guys have lost the love of the game. We talk about being mentally exhausted rather than physically exhausted. And he looks that way.
So,
he looks lost.
So I'm just going to wrap up game time. And you can watch both those games tonight on Sportsnet, part of the doubleheader on Wednesday Night Hockey. So that was game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
So quick thing I want to say, because our son Justin is watching from Halifax at Dalhousie with Will and Scott and Tanner.
Yeah.
They've had a great roommate set up there.
Yeah.
Are your boys, like, do you watch now when you watch with your sons because they like to do bets that it's just a whole different world watching games, you know, and they're watching like 82 games at the same time. And they got all that particular action going on.
So are they using you as information man?
Well, they did until they declared personal bankruptcy when they used me. So they're kind of young to do that. So, yes, I do not offer up. Actually, sometimes they have better information than we have, right? They're really on top of it.
Can I say something quick to Justin?
Yeah.
Get back to school. What are you doing? What are we paying you all that money for?
That's true.
Halifax.
Yeah. I like it. I like it.
Fantastic city.
Yeah.
What a place to go to university.
That was me talking to my kid.
Yeah, I know. I know.
15 years ago on your show.
Yeah, I know. I know. We used to do the fun things with Landry, and he made those bits of you, Anne Marie, and everything, and trying to snap your kids in order. Okay, anyway. Okay,
you just pulled a Doug McClain and you just drove the show in the ditch for like 30 seconds.
No, Doug goes in the ditch and keeps driving, okay? I at least call a CAA and try to get them out of the ditch.
In our Leaf Hour edition, we had a little bit of a conversation on, you know, is perhaps Austin Matthews got a little of an emotional letdown in his game right now. Could some fatigue be involved? Of course, we want to go back to say, was there a nagging injury over the past season that's coming into play? Pettersson, could he be hitting a bit of a mental brick wall right now?
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, and there's so much support now about, you know, psychologists and everything else, and people talk about, you know, battling depression. It used to be, hey, and sports was the worst for it. Snap out of it, right? And it's a lot that he's had to endure. I know he makes a lot of money, but, you know, the microcosm when you wake up and you're in a funk, it's like waking up with a physical injury, the same kind of thing that it doesn't go away overnight. And I mean, I'm not saying that's what he has. I have no idea, but boy, oh boy, they made the trade. They knew that one of them had to go, and he continues to be a shell of the player that deservedly got that big contract last year.
It's a scary one for Canucks fans, I would imagine. I mean, there's a big portion of Canucks fandom that, like us with Matthews, is saying that he's banged up and there's knee stuff and that he's been hurt and he hasn't been right. So there's that similar thing, like you said, but I don't know. You've watched him enough where it's just not even close to the same guy.
I know we talked to Brock Besser with Brian Lawton, but if you're Jimmy Rutherford and you know you've got a legit 30-goal scorer, it's a tough one to move him out. But
yeah,
at the same time, if you're thinking about a very legitimate offer that would entice him to stay, in your mind, what would that offer be?
Because, you know, he was honest about Bo Horvat, right? He said Bo Horvat picked the best year to have a really good year, and they had to trade him. And, funny animal in Vancouver about the ups and downs, like you're riding high, then you're not riding high. So you're saying, okay, like I thought last year, Philip Roenick was a really good pickup. I thought that was a good pickup for Vancouver, right? They gave a kind of a quiet one, or last year, the year before, whatever it was, but a draft pick to Detroit and got a guy that plays on their blue line. So that to me, Kipper, like draft pick's not going to help them. Like Vancouver, they were in the playoffs. They were the Western Conference version of the New York Rangers that were in the playoffs after 20 games, like comfortably in the playoffs, and they don't expect not to be in there. So I don't know what kind of quid pro quo trade can there be for Brock Besser. Otherwise you got to have him in your lineup.
He makes now 6.65.
So for a guy to hit unrestricted free agency at his age, which is 28. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a raise from $6 million, Gord. Yeah. But I would believe that the Vancouver Canucks would. First of all, there's the AAV and then there's the term. Now, only the great ones can hit both.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me like Jimmy Rutherford wants to go to Brock Besser. I love you, bud, but pick one. Pick the term or pick the AAV, but you can't have both. So would you up the AAV on a short-term deal, or would you say, I'll give you 6 or 7 years, but that AAV's got to be 7.
So
7-1.
But the other one, much like Mikko Rantanen, if you've come this far, no, Rantanen's with a new team. But like, is he married that he definitely wants? Is there a meeting of the minds about he definitely wants to be a Canuck and the Canucks definitely want them?
I think all indications I hear and read is that he loves it there. So
it seems to be that way versus when you're this close and the cap's going up. And I think that's obviously what Rantanen is looking around saying, hey, you only get so many chances to truly be a UFA, and they've always talked about him with Minnesota. Well, you know, how much everyone talks about home and all those other kind of things. But, yeah, signs now is great. You lock him up. But the other one is, if you don't, and I know Doug Armstrong's always been big on, if you're not locked up, I'm going to trade you. There's a good chance I'm going to trade you. But like Brian Lawton says, you really got to leave no stone unturned. You got to go for everything this year. So part of it is not giving up a Brock Besser for a future if you're the Vancouver Canucks.
Ian McIntyre has a piece on Sportsnet where he spoke with Besser. I think it came out today. Yeah, it came out today where, you know, he's frustrated a little bit with the contract situation and, you know, maybe thought something would be done, just paraphrasing from the article here. I think he's a good contributor to that team. I think you would definitely be a little bit wary of overpaying him, but I feel like he's a guy that Canuck fans really like, and, you know, that would be a big loss to their team, to me.
And you've like, lost JT Miller. You've lost JT Miller.
For sure. Are you trying to make the playoffs? Like, what is, like you said, like you're not going to trade him for a pick. Like, what are you really trying to do? So that's a, they're kind of stuck there with that one.
The other factor, and I kind of touched on this before we went to break, and I said I'd revisit it after the break, is I'm not sure people truly understand what a rising salary cap does the next 3 years. So over the course of the last 15 years, the struggles of the cap going up, the escrow was to make sure that the owners didn't overspend on the 50-50 partnership, right? So it's always been about escrow. Now the escrow's disappeared, and the cap and the revenue is rising. Now the obligation is on the owners to go put that money back in for 50-50. I'm not sure that many of these owners will be able to spend it fast enough in the next 3 years to put it back to the players, which means if they don't, then they're going to have to stroke a check. It's called surplus of the money back to the players.
Mm-hmm.
And we could be talking as much as $200 or $300 million. And for me, I'd rather, as a fan, as a season ticket holder, don't stroke them a check. Like, put it into the roster.
Use the money internally.
Use the money on the roster.
Yeah.
But that'll only happen if you like the player too, right? And you want them and you are committed to them. If you're not, then it may open an interesting dynamic.
I remember back when I was with the Rangers before you as assistant general manager, going out with the assistant general manager of the New York Knicks for lunch. And they were a cap. The cap was really successful there. It kind of saved the NBA. And he was just saying on that day, players were getting a check for something like $38,000 each because that's for teams that were under the cap. So basically, it was the kind of point that the cap also meant there was an obligation to spend a certain amount. So we're talking nickel and dime compared to now. And you're talking the same kind of thing that, okay, if you think you're saving money, you're just saving it, but you're going to write that big check and it's going to go back in the community pool. So there's going to be a whole different kind of strategy about things. And then the other one is, okay, the cap's going up. Same players just make more money. You know what I mean? Like, so I was like, oh, great, we're going to bring in. No,
it's the same percentages of the cap, right?
The same players all just make the same money basically a year from now.
But we also have a lot of superstars that are tied into 5 or 6 year contracts already. So it's that much harder to put it into the system somewhere else too. Yeah. So that's the interesting dynamic as well. But fascinating times. But at the end of the day, revenues are growing. Somebody's getting richer. It's not me or you or Sam right now, but somebody's getting richer.
Justin Bourne's gone to Disney World.
Must be him. Yeah.
It's got to be him.
It's got to be him.
It's got to be him. But it seems healthy enough. I know there's still some challenges out there, but it just seems healthy enough that at least it's going in the right direction.
It's nice having positive news. At a time right now, we're not getting a lot of it, okay? You know, we got a lot of just everything is a concern about world order, tariffs. Are we in a reset? Like, whatever. You know, it's nice in general. And I really believe, like attitude is huge, okay? And that's why I kind of don't like the attitude now because it's got a lot of things to be positive about. Just funny how things can change on a dime sometimes. And certainly, I like this that we finally got international hockey in. I mean, it didn't happen because of COVID before, and we knew that was a bitter pill. And now this kind of optimistic news, legitimate, after year, justifiably so because of COVID, you know, having new challenge and new and unexpected challenges. So it's great. It's great.
And what's great is you got a great dinner tonight, Sammy. I would have lent you a suit.
I forgot it, but I had to go back home, so I was almost late today.
You also will be attending the Conn Smythe dinner.
Can't wait. It's one of my favorite
And who
things.
Is being honored tonight, George Stelico?
Cito Gaston is getting they have like a lifetime achievement award. Of course, Conn Smythe's the house that Smythe built.
Yeah.
And this has been a charity dinner for many, many, many years. Like, I think it's the longest running one maybe in Canada. They're hard to run, you know. There's not that many of them anymore.
Our thanks to Dr. Jason Smith, orthopedic surgeon to the Stars, and Brian Lawton. We're back tomorrow with Gordo, Real Kipper and Bourne.